Well, this week we should conclude the book of Esther. We're going to be in Esther chapter 9. Sounds like I need to move this up. I moved my head up and it's gone. We'll be in Esther chapter 9 this evening. In Esther chapter 8, last week we studied the new law that Mordecai had written that now allowed the Jews to protect themselves from the attack that was supposed to happen on the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar. And we discussed how it parallels some of what we've seen with the old law and the new law and how there was freedom gained and a right to defend self. And we have that in the new law. And then I finished with, and I said in chapter 8, verse 17, in each and every province, in each and every city, wherever the king's commandments and his decree arrived, there was gladness and joy for the Jews, a feast and a holiday. And many among the people of the land became Jews, for the dread of the Jews had fallen on them. And I mentioned how I liked other versions' word instead of dread. The fear of the Jews had fallen on them. But Junior pointed out something that I didn't think about, which made good sense too. Could have there actually been some fear, because look how things changed so drastically for the Jews so quickly. The people, we know the Jews had put on sackcloth and ashes and fasted, and just months earlier, a decree came out that the Jews were to be destroyed, which caused great confusion. And now, a couple months later, here we are. Mordecai, the person that Haman hated, is now in rule. And also, the Jews now have the right to defend themselves. So could have that put fear in them as well? Which was a good point. And yes, it probably did. But I also believe, since many had changed to become like the Jews, I also believe the fear of the Lord was also some of what also was in what they were seeing. So not just fear of the Lord, but there could have been some that seen and actually feared the Jews. And we're going to actually see some of that more in chapter 9, where there was actual fear that also overcame them of the Jews. So it's chapter 9, verse 1. Now in the 12th month, that is the month Adar, on the 13th day, when the king's command and edict were about to be executed, on the day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain the mastery over them, it was turned to the contrary, so that the Jews themselves gained the mastery over those who hated them. So right away, we see again, Haman's law, what did it allow? The Jews to be annihilated, the Jews to be destroyed, and things have changed now, haven't they? So you had people that were excited. They were going to accomplish what Haman wanted. They were going to kill the Jews. There were people that hated the Jews. And then it says, but on the contrary, it turned on them. It was turned to the contrary, so that the Jews themselves gained mastery over those who hated them. So what were the Jews in this area? They were slaves, right? But the slaves now are going to show some power, and things are going to change around when the Jews were allowed to do it. In verse 2, the Jews assembled in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could stand before them, for the dread of them had fallen on all the people. Verse 3, even all the princes of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and those who were doing the king's business assisted the Jews, because the dread of Mordecai had fallen on them. So now we're seeing, at the very beginning, how did we see Mordecai in this story? And where do we see him now? What was Mordecai at the beginning of the story? Cousin. I was going to correct it in just a second. I know, I said it so many times that for one night that it just confuses the guy. Yeah, so you see the guy who was Esther's cousin at the gate. Was he anything, though? He was just a Jew, right? He was nothing extraordinary. He was a man that was hated by the second in command. He was there was a death sentence out for him. And now look at him. Now even all the governors, the satraps, everyone that worked underneath the king's commands, the princes, everyone, now fear him. That's how quickly it changed. Now do you think it just changed because it was Mordecai's work? No, we're starting to see another thing happening again, don't we? We see God's hand again and at work. I do want to, but I don't know if we've got time to go through. I have other verses and stuff that we can go to, but we see God's hand at work again. Mordecai has been elevated to a point. He became second in command. We've seen that, that the king gave his signet ring to Mordecai. He has elevated him back in chapter 8. Now Mordecai has gained all respect from all those that are underneath the king. You've seen a king that's been flip-flopped. Throughout the story, he jumps back and forth on sides, and now the people are fearing him because Mordecai has been given great power very quickly. And we know that it had been God's hand at work throughout all this. Verse 4, indeed Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces. For the man Mordecai became greater and greater. Thus, verse 5, thus the Jews struck all their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying, and they did what they pleased to those who hated them. And in Susa, the capital, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. In Parshandath, Dalphon, Asphatha, Portha, Adelia, Eridatha, Parmasta, Arisai, Eridai, and Vesatha. They all sound good to me. If you don't like it, you pronounce it next time. I should have just skipped it and jumped to verse 10. The 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Jews' enemy, but they did not lay their hands on the plunder. So what was one of the things that was in the decree written by Mordecai? The Jews did have right to plunder, didn't they? Haman also had it in his. Mordecai had it in his, but what do we see the Jews doing? They're not touching it. We're not going to know why. Again, there's speculations out there. We can understand in some of the stories we see in the past of why maybe they didn't do it. We don't know for sure why they didn't do it. But they did not touch it. They did not go after the plunder. On that day, the number of those who were killed in Susa, the capital, was reported to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and the 10 sons of Haman in Susa, the capital. What then have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is your petition? It shall be granted you. And what is your further request? It shall also be done. So now the king, again, is asking Esther, what is she like? What is her request? What else does she want done? What was Esther's request in the past? Very good, that they spare the lives of the Jews. Why do you think the king is asking Esther this again? Yeah. Well, that's, we haven't got to that yet, but yeah, sure, you're getting ahead of me, Ken. Yeah, she's going to answer his request, but why would King Ahasuerus ask her again, what else do you want done? It's kind of an odd question, isn't it, after he gave them the chance to save themselves, and now he's offering it up again of what else is there that you want? What is your further request? That's what I think. I mean, it does. It shows high regard. And again, you've seen how quickly, and he just got the report of how many men were killed in Susa, and now he's going to her and saying, what else do you want done? Do you think that maybe King Ahasuerus is also seeing that there's something happening here that's different with the Jews, and that maybe he needs to recognize there's something else going on here, some type of power? It doesn't say it. And again, this is where questions in my head come, because this was one of the first questions. I'm like, why is he asking her again? He already granted her everything that she's wanted so far, and the Jews have had the right to defend themselves, and they just killed 500 in this city of Susa. And here he requested again. So I just kind of wanted to see what your guys' thoughts were on. Yeah, I just thought it was an odd request. Why is he asking her this? I mean, it was just something popped in my head. So I just kind of wanted to hear your guys' thoughts. And because I didn't have a very good answer on it, besides that I feel like there might have been something he recognized that's going on that's different right here, that maybe I better go talk to the queen again. Is there anything else? Is there anything else you want done? Don't know. Verse 13. Then said Esther, if it pleases the king, let tomorrow also be granted to the Jews who are in Susa to do according to the edict of today. And let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows. Verse 14. So the king commanded that it should be done so, and an edict was issued in Susa, and Haman's 10 sons were hanged. So what was Esther's request here? Hang this 10 sons, Haman's 10 sons, and, yep, let the Jews continue on for another day in Susa. Let it continue, because the work obviously was not done. Why, again, it's thought questions, there's not answers in here. Why the 10 sons of Haman? What do we know about Haman's 10 sons earlier? And there was pride too, weren't they? Didn't it talk about in chapter 5, verse 11? Yes. Then Haman recounted to them the glory of his riches and the number of his sons and every instance where the king had magnified him and how he had promoted him above the princes and servants of the king. Also, what is Haman's father? What did they call Haman's father? Right, an Agagite. The enemies of the Jews. So even Haman's father hated the Jews. Haman hated the Jews. Good chance they wanted the sons gone too, because there's probably some more hatred of the Jews that would continue on through the sons of Haman. So they wanted the 10 sons. They wanted an extra day of being able to continue with the edict. Verse 15, and the Jews who were in Susa assembled also on the 14th day of the month of Adar and killed 300 men in Susa. But they did not lay their hands on the plunder. So again, they keep pointing this out. They're not laying their hands on the plunder. That's the second time we've heard that. Yes?
They're sending a message. They're not in for the plunder. It's a clear message. They're not doing this for the riches.
I believe so too. I believe that is one of the messages they're trying to send, is we're not doing this for the riches. Verse 16, now the rest of the Jews who were in the king's provinces assembled to defend their lives and rid themselves of their enemies and kill 75,000 of those who hated them. But they did not lay their hands on the plunder. So that's the third time we've heard that. Verse 17, this was done on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th day they rested and made it a day of feasting and rejoicing. But the Jews who were in Susa assembled on the 13th and the 14th of the same month, and they rested on the 15th day and made it a day of feasting and rejoicing. Therefore, the Jews of the rural areas who live in the rural towns make the 14th day of the month of Adar a holiday for rejoicing and feasting and sending portions of food to one another. Verse 20, then Mordecai recorded these events, and he sent letters to all the Jews who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, both near and far, obligating them to celebrate the 14th day of the month Adar and the 15th day of the same month annually, because on those days the Jews rid themselves of their enemies, and it was a month which was turned for them when from sorrow into gladness and from mourning into a holiday. And they should make them days of feasting and rejoicing and sending portions of food to one another and gifts to the poor. So we see they didn't put their hands on the plunder. They did celebrate. They made a feast and holiday of these, of the 14th and 15th day of the 12th month of Adar. But what was one of the expectations of them when they do this, when they do enjoy this feast? Came at the end of verse 22. Yeah, so they're going to rejoice and send portions of food to one another and gifts to the poor. So it's funny that they mention about them not plundering anything, but it does mention that when they do celebrate, they're to give gifts to the poor. They are to share with one another and give gifts to the poor. So we, yes, Stephanie. The only thing I had to correct you on was it happened on the 13th day, the 75,000. So it happened that same day, yes, with the 500. Yes, but other than that, yes, no, that's a great point. No, that was on the 13th day, 75,000 in the other provinces, and the 127 provinces, or 126, I guess, because Susa, you had the 500 killed, and then you had 75,000 killed that 13th day, because they stopped fighting on the 13th day, except for in Susa, they were given an extra day, which then they killed an additional 300 in Susa. Yes. Yes. But no, yes, and so, yeah, the king, he did fear that because he said, how many other men have been maybe killed in these other areas in my provinces? So he's seen 500 just in Susa, and he was just wondering how many more. Oh, we know now there was 75,500 on the 13th day and another 300 killed on the 14th day. But the Jews, we know, were not out for power. They weren't taking advantage of the liberality that was given to them. I think of, and how did they defend themselves? It says they came together in the cities. So it wasn't them just trying one-on-one to take care of it. They came together to defend themselves. I mean, I think of a lot of things, like even with the church and stuff, and how we're to take care of one another, to feed the poor, how we should come together during our times of struggles and help one another to overcome things. How often do we try to do it one-on-one? These are some of the thoughts that came into my head as I read this story, because, like I said, I think we need to try learning lessons from these Old Testament stories, and these were some of the things that just come to my head once we are His. He created a body that's supposed to be one. We should work together as one so we can overcome the enemy. And so these are just thoughts that come across my head as I read stories like this and say, okay, go ahead and eliminate those that are threats. We know in the church we're told to remove the evil. Chuck? Yeah, and that's what they did show, that they were not the aggressors. They came together to defend themselves. They didn't go after. They waited for them to come after them. The Jews waited for the people that hated them, their enemies, to come after them. So they came together. It's lessons like this are some of the things that I got as I studied this story. Verse 20, any more comments before I go on? Well, they waited. They came together and they waited for them. They were not the aggressors. They did not go after, huh? Well, I'm saying the enemies came after them. It was not them being the aggressor going after the enemies. It was the enemy coming after them. Yes. As Chuck said, the enemies kind of exposed themselves. They came after the Jews. Yeah, Ron. Right. Yeah, I don't think that, and there again, if the enemies didn't come after them, would have they even, there would have been nothing of the story and stuff, but the enemies came after them and revealed themselves and, oh, wow, it's gone. Is that a sign of old age? It's gone. I just had a thought and it just completely... It'll probably come to me here in a minute. Any more comments before? All right, verse 23. Thus the Jews undertook what they had started to do and what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the adversary of all the Jews, had schemed against the Jews to destroy them and had cast pur, that is the lot, to disturb them and destroy them. But when it came to the king's attention, he commanded by letter that his wicked scheme which he had devised against the Jews should return on his own head and that he and his son should be hanged on the gallows. Therefore they call these days Purim, and that after the name of Purim after the name of Pur. And because of the instructions in this letter, both what they had seen in this regard and what happened to them. The Jews established and made a custom for themselves and for their descendants and for all those who allied themselves with them, so that they should not fail to celebrate these 2 days according to their regulation and according to their appointed time annually. So I did some research. I just kind of want to see, is this still a thing celebrated? This is one of the feasts that is still celebrated by the Jews. Purim is still celebrated by the Jews. There are some things, though, I see where the world has perversed it, or the Jews have perversed it in some ways, too, where it's kind of lost. You see, it's funny, because you see, like, in the smaller communities, I'd read up on some of it, and you see how they still hold to how holy this is, and they read the book of Esther, and they celebrate the feast. And then there were some of these other ones, it's all about parades and partying and very evil. I mean, it was not good. And so the world can perverse it. But this is one of the few things that are still celebrated by the Jews that was started back then. I kind of got what I was thinking when you said. So what time period, again, does Esther fall in? Because you said about God and his promises. And what time period does this fall in? Between Ezra 6 and 7. So we know that the Jews were allowed to go back to build the foundations of the temple. There's going to be more return of the Jews later. God holds to his promises. God keeps his promises. We don't know when. The time frame's going to be on things, but this story we do know falls between Ezra chapter 6 and Ezra chapter 7. So, yeah, God was not going to let things fail when he's in charge of it all. He's going to take care of his people. He is going to fulfill his promises that he made to the remnant. And so, yes, we know that God's hand was in this to make this happen, and God was allowing the Jews to have the victory over this and to go ahead and overcome their enemies, because God has always protected the Jews, or the Israelites back then, because he did make that promise. Eric? Yeah, because we don't even see anywhere any of the Jewish lives were lost. It doesn't talk about the Jewish lives that were lost, but God was protecting them all. And what did we see back in chapter 3, I believe it was? Yeah, chapter 3. What was going on with Jews throughout the provinces when they got the edict? Sackcloth, ashes. Yeah, there was mourning going on. They went to the fasting afterwards with Esther. Esther commands the fasting to happen. So yes, it was not just Mordecai and Esther doing that. That was going on throughout all these different provinces. That there were many Jews doing this, looking to God during their time of struggle. Again, another lesson to be taken. All right, verse 28. So these days were to be remembered and celebrated throughout every generation, every family, every province, and every city. And these days of Purim were not to fail from among the Jews, or their memory fade from their descendants. So that made me think of another parallelism of our saved, our celebration. What do we celebrate? Because of our salvation, that when we are saved, we take the Lord's Supper every first day of the week to remind ourselves of what he had done for us. And so you see, again, that it's not to fade, that it's supposed to be something just passed on, and that they're supposed to continue to do. And when Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper, do this in remembrance of me. And so it just makes me think, well, when we do it, do we think of it as a feast and a celebration and a remembrance of our salvation? And this was what the Jews were supposed to do. It was all for a reminder. All right. Any comments, questions so far? All right. Verse 29. Then Queen Esther, daughter of Abihail, with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm their second letter about Purim. And he sent letters to all the Jews to the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Ahasuerus, namely words of peace and truth, to establish these days of Purim at their appointed times as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had established for them, and just as they had established for themselves and for their descendants with instructions of their times of fasting and their lamentation. So there's something else we learn new about the feast of Purim. It's supposed to have fasting and lamentation with it, as well as giving, sharing with one another and giving gifts to the poor. Verse 32, and the command of Esther established these customs for Purim, and it was written in the book. Now King Ahasuerus laid a tribute on the land and on the coastlands of the sea, and all the accomplishments of his authority and strength, and the full account of the greatness of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was second only to King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and in favor with the multitude of his kinsmen, one who sought the good of his people, and one who spoke for the welfare of his whole nation. So we see, again, some new things about Mordecai as well here. He was obviously a man of honor, one that looked out and cared for others. We knew that he cared for Esther. We've seen that at the beginning, his love for her and how he cared for her. We've seen his willingness to take her in as his own daughter. So you've seen characteristics about Mordecai. So I kind of wanted to just go and look at some things that James has to say, and let's see if some of these sound familiar with the story of Esther. So if you would flip over to James chapter 3. We're just going to read some verses and see how they relate to the story. See if you see some of the things here that's talked about for us that was done in the story of Esther and Mordecai. James chapter 3 verse 13. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show it by his good behavior, his deeds in gentleness of wisdom. Did we not see gentleness of wisdom in Esther and the way she approached the king? Did we not see good behavior in their deeds with Mordecai? Did we not see that with the Jews and not plundering? James chapter 4, 14 through 16. James chapter 4, verses 14 through 16. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. Esther, who knows why you were put in this position at this time? Your life's a vapor. Do the will of God. Let him take control of your life, because life goes by so quickly. James chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be miserable and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you. I think we've seen that with the Jews. We've seen it with Mordecai. Humble themselves. We've seen it with Esther. Humble themselves. God exalts them. I really don't have a lot of time. We see that God is faithful. Joshua 23:14. Joshua says to the people of Israel, let me flip over there real quick so I read it word for word. I got my little Cliff notes, or Mark notes, because they're not as good as Cliff. Joshua 23:14. Now behold, today I am going the way of all the earth, and you know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one word of all the good words which the Lord your God spoke concerning you has failed. All have been fulfilled for you. Not one of them has failed. God fulfilled his promises. We read it in Isaiah. We read it in Daniel. We've seen promises of God about what was going to happen. They happen. They do not fail. God does not fail. God does fulfill his promises. Make you all search for this one. Zephaniah 2:3. Seek the Lord, all you humble of the earth, who have carried out his ordinances. Seek righteousness. Seek humility. Perhaps you will be hidden in the day of the Lord's anger. Micah 6:8. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Then I want to finish with James chapter 5, verses 7 and 8. James chapter 5. Verses 7 and 8. Be patient, therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. Behold, the farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains. You too be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. So I hope you guys all enjoyed the study of Esther. I hope you have found some things in there that maybe you didn't see at one time. I hope that you're encouraged by the story and do realize that God does have control of all things. God will fulfill the promises which he made. And that we need to remain humble. That we need to look to the Lord in all things. God will exalt those that are humble. He will humble those that exalt themselves. Any comments? Any questions? That I don't know. I did let Brent know that I would be finishing up tonight, so he said he will have something ready for next week. So I don't know where the study's going. Carrie, do you know? Okay. It has not been decided yet, so. All right. Well, I appreciate your guys' time and have a great week.